You are listening to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode 481, The Superboy Chronicles, The Heroic Failures of Superboy. And welcome to episode 481 of Legion of Substitute Podcasters. I am Paul French, and today I am woke up just in time for the new year, lad. Last night was New Year's Eve. Today's New Year's Day. A little slow start here. Usually I would have had the episode up before now, but you know how it is. So it ended up with between the flu bug tearing through our home around the holidays. It ended up just being Ella and I up and watching some movies. So we watched some Supergirl, and we watched the fall finale of, well, both Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow. And quite enjoyed both of them. And then we started watching Up. We started watching Up. And, well, I took that opportunity to rest for a little bit. And so she woke me up, fortunately, just before the ball dropped in Times Square. So we watched some of that, and then all went to sleep. So all good. Hope everyone had a safe and happy New Year's Eve. So gonna get to it. Basically, the reason that we are doing a Superboy episode today is because, speaking of the flu bug, it got me last week, and we were going to record on Thursday. And so we will get back into the Superboy and the Legion stories of the last couple of Superboy and the Legion stories, because then it leads into the story that I'm reading right now. All right, so we are looking at Superboy, New Adventures of Superboy, issue number 22. And so this has a cover date of October 1981. Now, a couple of things about this. All right. So I'm actually going to do both parts of the story, because I find there's often a gap of a month or two between these episodes, and it's easy to lose the thread. So I will make sure that I do both parts of the story. I don't know that I actually read part two, because it does tie into an, at the time, current Superman villain. All right, so this one, on the cover, we've got Superboy with all his stuff packed into a sack, which is his cape. And he's flying away from the Earth, and we see the Daily Planet. Space alien pursues Superboy to Earth, endangers world. Gotham Gazette. Boy of Steel causes Pacific tidal wave. I don't know what the Daily Herald was saying, because he's blocking it, but I bet it wasn't good. And the Smallville Sentinel says Superboy imperils town with deadly cloud. So he's saying, I have to leave Earth. Instead of a hero, I've turned out to be the world's greatest menace. Yep, that's right. All right, so, and you can see the film Superman 2. That's what it says. All right, so rocketed to Earth from the exploding planet Krypton, baby Kal-El. That's right, there's a typo on Kal-El. And this happens from time to time, and they say that the Ben Oda, who is the letter on this issue, I remember when Dick Giordano wrote his obituary when he passed away, he said one of the things was, there were often typos, but given the fact that they used to give Oda an issue to complete in a matter of days, or a day or so, you know, he did pretty well. But typo on Kal-El, you think that one would be one of the basics. Anyway, so Superboy is standing there, and he can see these little flashes of things that have happened. The tidal wave, the poison cloud, a glob creature from space searching for human food. And he says, all those catastrophes were unleashed by a super menace. Me! Not all the heroic missions Superboy undertakes come to a successful conclusion. Sometimes they end in disaster. The heroic failures of Superboy. Writer is Kerry Bates, penciler Kurt Schaffenberger, inked by David Hunt. Letterer is Ben Oda, as I mentioned. The colorist, Jerry Serpy, and the editor, one Julius Schwartz. So, we're on one of the outermost Hawaiian islands on the scene of a disaster in progress, and there's basically a volcano going off, and everyone's freaking out, running away from it. Run to higher ground! And They say, it looks to be the worst eruption these islands have seen in 100 years. And they say, keep moving, but put as much distance between us and the lava flow. And they say, well, I'm afraid nothing in heaven or earth can save us for long. And someone points up and says, nothing except him, you mean? That's right, we have Superboy with a big chunk of mountain over his head. It looks, you know, the kind of, you know, just the tip. And they say, I've seen him in photographs, even on TV, but a personal appearance, wow, the Superboy of the mainland is everything we heard, and more. Look how effortlessly he carries a rock the size of Diamond Head. And so he puts this thing and basically plugs the, the volcano with this thing. It says, I needed to plug up the eruption and send that molten lava back down the way it came. He did the impossible before our very eyes. No wonder this Superboy has become a legend at such a tender age. Nothing else tender about him. That boy is tough. So he's like, okay, everything's good. And he flies back and yay, everything's happy. So he lands at the house in Smallville at 321 Maple Street. And he says, Smallville may not be a tropical paradise or world-famous tourist attraction, but to me, it'll always be home sweet home. And this week, an empty house, what with Ma and Pa out on the West Coast visiting Aunt Mary and Uncle Fred. For the next 5 days, I'm on my own. At least Pa closed up the store. Oh, you know where this is headed. Super kegger. He says, which leaves me free to concentrate on my dual responsibilities as Superboy and Clark Kent. Well, there's that, too. So he decides, Lana should be here by now to borrow my trigonometry notes. And so he checks over there just to see what's going on. And she says, I'm late, Dad. I'll be over at Clark's for a while if you need me. Good thing he got back when he did. And Professor Lang is on the on his shortwave radio saying, oh my gosh, this is terrible. I'm picking up a transmission from a fellow shortwave radio ham in Hawaii, and according to the frantic SOS he's broadcasting, millions of people on those islands are doomed. Oh no! And Superboy takes a look with his supervision and says, double oh no! And out he goes. In fact, doesn't even use his secret tunnel. He actually smashes through the window, says, no time to use my secret tunnel. Super speed is of the essence. And he flies over there and... And he says, yeah, the super speed and super strategy. The catastrophe about to engulf the Hawaiian Islands is so close, there'll be no time for follow-up, save if my first one fails. And he gets there, and basically a big tidal wave. And he says, what amazes me almost as much as the size of this giant tidal wave are the incredible odds against these islands being hit by two natural disasters in the very same day. And so he says, well, no sense in worrying about the cause, not while I'm trying to counteract the oncoming mountain of water. So he does this. He creates a counter wall of sonic booms to try and fizzle out the wave. And he manages to do it. Just enough ultrasound to do the trick. So he's like, okay, well, now that that's passed, it's time to seek out the reason for this. What could make it happen? What could cause set off a shockwave powerful enough to create this 50-foot wave? And he sees this massive fissure, and then he realizes, oh no, what has happened is basically he plugged up the volcano and, you know, put a cap on millions of tons of pressurized magma. And he says, I unwittingly increased the already lethal pressure, forcing the seething lava to find another route to the surface, which resulted in the fissure in the Pacific Basin and the tidal wave. He says, I realize now I should have checked out the consequences of diverting the magma flow, but instead I was in a selfish hurry to get back home. Because of my carelessness, millions of lives were needlessly jeopardized. And he's glad that Mom and Pa are away for the week because he'd be too embarrassed to tell them how he'd failed to use his powers responsibly, etc., etc. And he says, but come to think of it, this isn't the first time I've let them down. And there's a flashback. Biloo, 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 biloo. It was a few days after my 10th Earth birthday when my super hearing picked up desperate cries from the Smallville countryside. And so followers of this series will know that that means he'd been in business. He'd been active as Superboy for 2 years at that point. So they say, help, can anyone hear us? And Teddy and Edie are trapped in this cavern. And so... they say, you know, don't yell, you're wasting your breath, and we need the oxygen. And so he gets in there, there's these glowing rocks. And so he hadn't noticed the glow of eerie radiation, and now it seems to be off gassing. And so he takes them out and drops them off far away from the cavern, and says, next time you two decide to go spelunking, you should first. And they're like, oh, look what's going on behind you. And he sees this weird gas cloud, and he says, it's so poisonous, the slightest whiff could kill a horse. So he takes it out there and he kind of freezes it up. And, you know, he says, oh, with the wind drifting in a westerly direction towards Smallville, I knew there was no time to lose. So he, you know, while the cloud was still self-contained, he wanted to take care of it. So he uses his super breath to freeze it. And he says he had no way of knowing what would happen. But anyway, then he takes it to outer space, well beyond the Earth's gravitational field. Then he goes back and he takes a look at the rocks. And he says, I never thought something like this could happen to me. I wonder what Mom and Pa are going to say. And so they say, well, there's no way you could have known in advance that your X-ray vision would allow an unearthly gas to escape. He says, maybe not, but I should have noticed the way those rocks were glowing. Then I would have realized the mountainside had been hit by a recent meteor shower composed of unknown space elements that were unpredictable. I should have been aware of the strange side effect my X-rays were causing. And Jonathan lights his pipe and says, I won't tell you to go easy on yourself, son, because today you've discovered the most dangerous disadvantage that comes with your astounding powers. Unless you're always very, very careful, sometimes they can inadvertently backfire, perhaps even triggering off a menace deadlier than the one you set out to prevent. And now that you've experienced your first close call, I'm sure you'll be more cautious from now on. And so he says that, you know, that he was more careful from that time on. But then a few years later, he was coming back from a mission in a distant solar system and had no idea as he plunged through the atmosphere that he was being followed and leveled off at 30,000 feet and waves to this jetliner. And they are pointing out behind him, and it looks like there's a big globular creature that kind of tries to absorb him, kind of a gelatin thing, like the blob. And so it swallowed him straight, like something straight out of a sci-fi movie. And he says, no good. This creature's gelatin-like molecular structure makes it malleable enough to absorb my super blows. And to make a bad situation even worse, it was heading towards Smallville to make a full-course meal out of its inhabitants. But how do I stop it? It's already resisted my efforts to steer it spaceward again. And so he decides, hey, I got an idea. Instead of trying to take it the other way, let's let it follow through in its way. And he basically womps through the ground and all the way through the Earth and deep into the Earth's crust. And then just kept going. And so basically, you know, I can remember my friend David Burnett when I was a kid. We were in the backyard and he said that he was going to dig a hole through to China. And you know, I'm not going to lie, I believed it. And he got bitten by a black fly, so he never got to finish. So I don't know if he could have done it or not, but anyway. Superboy, as it turns out, and that would have actually been maybe a couple of years before this issue came out, maybe 4 or 5 years before. He goes right through the Earth, kind of completely bisects it in this little hole, and then takes it back into space. He says, no way to make an accurate calculation, but I hope this speed turns out to be enough. And sure enough, he holds back, and it keeps going, and there is victory. In the midst of this, we end up with a map of Smallville. Remember when they used to do such things? So in the middle of the pages, there was a big map of Smallville. And it actually shows, so you got the Metropolis River, you've got Superb City, then a bit up the river is Bigville, then you get Smallville, then Midvale, then Metropolis, and then there's the Metro Narrows Bridge, which leads right over to Gotham City. And then the river becomes the Gotham River. Now, of course, that's all kind of changed since then. But we also see the secret tunnel. We see the Kent home and Lana's home, and Professor Potter's just around the corner. The Rosses are just across the street from him. So yeah, it's kind of neat. Like the Rosses lived at 324 Grove Street. Professor Potter was at 301 Grove Street. And it looks like the Kent General Store, just looking at the map. Okay, there's a thing for the Kent Farm. Smallville Pharmacy, good grief. the florist, Lydia's Beauty Shop, Ames Hats, Al's Shoe Repair. Ah, there it is, the Kent General Store. So you've got Smallville Museum, which is just up Maple Street, basically, and the Superboy Museum. So just at the corner of Maple and Roosevelt. And so you just go up Roosevelt and you hang a left at Oak Street. And there's the Kent General Store right next to Al's Shoe Repair. There's a bookstore on the other side of it and Tam's Music Store. And so, yes, lots of stuff in Smallville. I love when they used to do maps like this because I can remember going through and saying, okay, so for this thing, and you get things like Pabst Plumbing, of course, named for George Papp, the artist. Otto's Butcher Shop, clearly named for Otto Binder. I don't know of all the other names, you know, but they had to come from somewhere, and so there's all often little things buried in there that are like Gil's Paints. You know, they're talking about Gil Kane, and there's always like little Easter eggs like that. Oh, the Drapers live way up on the other side of Smallville. That's Moosey Draper, who would later become the master jailer. He's at Wilson and what's the other street? Wilson and Elm. That's right. A Nightmare on Elm Street, indeed. Anyway, all right. So that's enough of that. But it is very cool, nevertheless. You know what? Maybe that will be my later today picture. And boom. Okay. So we've got the map of Smallville. I'll put it up on the site. Okay. So... anyway, so he gets himself free of it, but, you know, he says, if I'd been more alert, I would never led that monster anywhere near our solar system. And so he gets back, and he's saying, I don't think I could bring myself to tell Ma and Pa about this mistake. And it turns out he never did tell them. but he's sitting there on this mountainside saying, you know, I never did confide in them about my close call with the glob creature. Yet if I had, I might not be feeling so guilty and so very alone right now. So he flies back home and he says, it's just as well that they're not here. I don't have to talk about my responsibility for the glob monster and the tidal wave. While it would be good to hear their reassuring voices, I know what I must do the next time this happens. Uh-oh. Which means, you know, it's going to happen very, very soon. In fact, he meets up with Lana for his date. And he says, Lana, I hope I'm not late for our date. And she says, well, at least you're here. A while ago, when I called upon you for your trig notes, you were nowhere. Because, of course, he had taken off to deal with the tidal wave. So they go to an amusement park. They go in. They're about to get into the Tunnel of Fright. He says, really, Lana, is this your idea of a good time? And she says, oh, relax, Clark. It'll be a million laughs. Dad used to take me through here when I was a little girl, and I loved it. And so they've got the scary whatchamacallits, and they keep going out there. And eek, scream, Clark, scream. It's all in fun. But the only scream Clark Kent is interested in is the one his superheroes have picked up outside. That's right. He sees a thief robbing the box office behind the stand. So he says, got to go into my act. So he's like, ooh, this is too much for me, Lana. I can't stand to see or hear any more of this scary stuff. And he splashes into the water and she says, oh, Clark, you'll never change. And so he makes a quick, swift, super change of his clothes. And out he goes. He says, even though the moat is only a few feet deep, it provided enough cover for me to pull this switch. Now I'll take to the sky too fast for anyone to see. And he does, and he actually uses his super breath so that the fleeing felon is running in midair. He says, hey, how could such a thing happen? He says, blame it on Superboy. But meanwhile, he hears a scream from Lana. He says, "That great sons, that's Lana's scream, and this time it's real. She must have dived into the moat looking for me when she hit her head on that protruding section of wall." And she's hit her head. So this is a job for Clark Kent. And he gets in there and she's like, cough, but where were you, Clark? When I cough, looked in the moat and couldn't see you, I thought the worst had happened. Gosh, Lana, what can I say? But I'm sorry. He says, I could have said that it was my fault for pulling that stunt and to go into action as Superboy, a stupid stunt that almost cost Lana her life. So once again, using my superpowers backfired. That settles it. I made a sacred vow of what I must do if I ever endangered another human life. And so he's back at 321 Maple Street, and he says, you know, If I could unknowingly place Lana's life in jeopardy, I could just as easily or accidentally harm Ma and Pa someday. That's why it's just as well they aren't here right now. I'm sure they both do their best to talk me out of this, convince me I'm wrong, persuade me to stay. But even if they were here, not even they could change my mind. And he's left a note next to the picture of them that is in the house. He says, I've left them a letter explaining everything, assuring them that none of this has been their fault. No one could have trained me better. Only I am to blame. I just didn't have what it takes to handle these powers of mine safely. And so he looks around, a last look around the home he's known and loved, and then it's really better this way. Choke. Take a drink. I have some coffee left, I believe. Yep. And says, I don't think I would have been able to look at them in the eyes to say goodbye. And he's packed everything in his cape. And says, I thought about finding another planet to live on. Then I realized I could end up being just as much of a menace on an alien world as I was here on Earth. No, there's only one place for someone like me. One place where I can't possibly do harm to anyone ever again. And so off he goes. We challenge you, reader. Can you guess where the Teen of Steel has decided to exile himself for the good of Earth? Find out next issue in the Superboy Who Never Was. And then there is a crypto story. But we'll come back to that in a minute. All right, so off we go to issue 23. And now I don't think I ever actually read this issue before. I know when I was getting the collection, I kind of picked it up and all that. But you know, sometimes you just don't get to all of them, or you fall down a rabbit hole rereading ones that you've already read. And this was, you know, 20-odd issues in. All right, so on the cover we have Superboy in the strangest showdown of history in the Old West between an alien gunslinger and the Boy of Steel. And we see Superboy clearly at high noon walking down the street as an alien zaps him. And so there we go. So this is cover date, November 1981. It actually hit the stands August 20th, 1981. So this second part is brought to us by the same team of writer Carrie Bates, penciler Kurt Schaffenberger, inker David Hunt, colorist Jerry Serpy, letterer Ben Oda, and editor Julius Schwartz. So we see on the cover basically kind of a takeoff of, you know, so he says, oh, no more Ma and Pa Kent, no more Lana Lang, no more Smallville. As far as the rest of the world is concerned, no more Superboy. This is the way it has to end. And so we see, clearly he's going through the time travel. There's some colored swirlies, mostly purple in this case, and multicolored calendar pages. We got 1888, 1897, 1909, etc., etc. And looks like we're starting at 1968, interestingly enough. So anyway, the Superboy Who Never Was, I guess. Leave the Earth of Superboy's era and the town of Smallville far behind. Plumb the swirling cosmic depths of the time barrier with the Teen of Steel as he plunges into Earth's past, into another century and a new life where he must become the Superboy Who Never Was. And so meanwhile, we start off at 321 Maple Street, where Jonathan and Martha are returning home after a week away on the West Coast, visiting Mary and Fred. And he said, I certainly enjoyed myself with Mary and Fred out on the coast. And Martha says, I'll say, you're lucky you didn't get badly sunburned. He says, those California beaches make a fine change of pace, all right, but nothing can take the place of this house in our general store. And so they get in, and Martha finds the letter, and she says, it's from Clark. He's gone. Choke. Take a drink. And he's never coming back. And he says, what? Let me see that. You must have misread it, Martha. Oh, Jonathan, if only we'd been here this week, we might have been able to reassure him this is where he belongs. Jehoshaphat, if he really means what he says, you're right. No one on Earth will ever see our super son again, including us. But where, Jonathan? Where could he have gone? And he says, I have no idea. He says, all the note says is I'm heading for a place where my superpowers can never endanger innocent lives again. Something super traumatic must have happened during the past week to make our Clark call himself a menace. And he says, I agree, Martha, but whatever it was that gave him such a low opinion of himself, the damage has already been done. All we can do now is hope and pray for our son. And so we see, you know, so obviously the Kents are very sad about this. We see Clark going through the time stream saying, if Ma and Pa hadn't been away the past few days, they would have done all they could to talk me out of this. But deep down, I know I've made the right decision for the safety and well-being of everyone on Earth. Even though I've always had good intentions and the best training possible under Ma and Pa's guidance, there have been an increasing number of instances when I've made a mess of my superpowers. Just basically a little recap. And in fact, he does recap. You know, we see the tidal wave, the poison cloud. We see Lana almost drowning in the moat. And he says, never again could I allow my superpowers to endanger one more life. So he says, But where could I go where there'd be absolutely no chance of my causing catastrophe? Even if I found another suitable planet to live on, I'd inevitably turn out to be as much of a menace as on Earth. Having ruled out space, I considered time. Obviously, a future era would be just as endangered by my backfiring superpowers as the present, which left the past and all its possible havens. This line of reasoning is baffling to me. It says, even though I haven't had much time traveling experience, yet one of the things I've learned is that it is impossible even for a Superboy to change the past. Ah, that's right. So what he's hoping for is that the sort of the time travel mechanisms that were present in the in this the late Silver Age, late or sort of mid Bronze Age time frame, that they would act as course correction. He says there could be no way to save Abraham Lincoln from being assassinated, no way to prevent the Titanic from striking an iceberg and sinking. Conclusion: Earth's past is the only safe realm in the cosmos for a potential menace like me. No matter how badly I foul up, no matter how many catastrophes spin off from my superpowers, nothing will really change. The laws of the universe will not permit any of my superpowered acts to alter the course of history. And so he switches into some very dandy, civilian clothes. He heads into Cripple Creek. Yeah, that's where. Up on Cripple, I can't even say it. cue the band. So Clark Kent, welcome to the Old West in the year 1888. Say goodbye to Superboy forever. So 2 weeks later, we see there's a. So we got the sheriff, and it says, make your move, sheriff, or go for your peace. And he says, I warned you, Jess. That'll be the last time you use that arm to flash your gun for a holdup, Jess Manning. And he shoots Jess Manning, and he says, first we go to Doc Hobart's office to get you patched up, and then I got a nice clean cell waiting for you. And there's someone writing stuff in a notepad. I guess who? He says, lucky shot, Cooper. That was all. A moment later, in the cluttered office of the Cripple Creek Courier, editor Rufus Matlock and his... Matlock? And his loyal helper toil away on the next edition. Just another 100 copies more to run off, Pa. And he says, you keep a close watch on that old press, daughter. It has a tendency to gum up in the middle of a run. Mr. Matlock, what are you so fired up about, Clark Kent? A shootout on the other end of town just a few minutes ago, sir. Sheriff Cooper just outdrew Jess Manning and winged him. I wrote every detail in my notepad, just the way you taught me. Jess Manning, eh? That outlaw's one mean hombre with a gun. But you did good, Clark. You might have the makings of a first-class reporter yet. Aw, he's the 1800s Perry White. He says, soon after the day's work is done, Gail Matlock, I guess, is the daughter of the publisher of the paper. And so Clark says, mind some company on the walk home, Gail? And she says, I declare, Clark, if you aren't the politest young man who's ever set foot in this town. And you're different in other ways, too. Not like the other rowdy young men around these parts. Oh, those folks back east in Smallville is civilized as you? And he says, well, I guess I must admit, Smallville is somewhat ahead of its time. Well, looky here, if it ain't the new tenderfoot in town. Oh, dear, she says. Lucas McCabe, you and your brother Mape mosey on and leave us alone. He says, you always walk with a pretty mist for protection, dude. And the other guy says, looks to me like we got ourselves a real yellow belly here, Luke. And he says, I'm sure you fellas don't mean any real harm, so why don't you just keep walking like the young lady asked. And you hear that, Mape? The kid says we don't mean no harm. And the guy takes his hat and punches his fist through it. And he says, is that a fact? Let's see what he says after we start cleaning the street with his fancy clothes while he's in them. And he says, okay, boys, I tried to ask you nicely. I suppose I'll have to get physical now. And they're like, do you hear that? The tenderfoot's going to throw his idea of a punch. And even Gail can't bear to look. She says, she averts her eyes. And Clark cleans their clocks, basically. He says, here it is, boys, my idea of a punch. Pow. Oof. Whap. Oof. And down they go. And he says, now isn't that a coincidence? They both decided to doze off just when the conversation was getting interesting. Clark Kent, my, you are a gentleman just full of surprises. Of course, the editor's daughter doesn't dream how surprising those surprises really are. Oh, she'd be very surprised if she knew how surprising those surprises are. He's thinking to himself, what a wonderful feeling not to have to put on that meek and mild routine anymore. Since there's no reason for Superboy to appear in this era, there's no reason for Clark Kent to be the pushover he used to be. Look how Gail was looking at me with sheer admiration, the way Lana Lang used to look at me as Superboy. It's great to be appreciated for being myself and for a change and not the superhero with the cape. But meanwhile, at that very moment, several miles away, that's right, directly above that is, we see a UFO. And this guy's saying, my instruments indicate the raw materials I need to synthesize new fuel are in abundance on this world. I have barely enough protopower to navigate through this atmosphere. No chance to conduct an aerial scan of the planet's most bountiful deposits. Must focus my sights on the nearest available deposit in the general area below and trust it will prove sufficient for my needs. Yes, reader, the general area below happens to be the American Southwest. That afternoon in Cripple Creek, we see a little brown-haired kid running with a gun. And that's because he's stolen it from someone. He says, somebody stop that little whippersnapper. He stole my shooting iron right out of my holster. And he says, Clark pulls Gail away. He says, we better keep clear of him, Gail. He may be just a boy, but that gun makes him armed and dangerous. And he says, blasted right I am. Stay back or you'll see just how good a shot I am. And he says, phew, I was about to blow a blast of super breath to knock that gun boy off his feet, but it would have been a wasted effort. If history calls for him to steal that gun and get away with it, oh, here we go. But did history really call for you to beat the tar out of the, Anyway, he says, then that's what will and must happen. Even if I tried to stop him, something would inevitably go wrong and he'd escape with the gun anyway. No force in the universe can alter destiny. That's why I'm here. The same universal laws that prevent my superpowers from doing any harm in this era also prevent them from doing any good. That's the way it must be. He says, psst, pa, it's me, Toby. And it turns out he's got a couple of crates up against the town jail. He says, I swiped a six shooter for you, just like you told me. That's my boy. And a moment later, after raising a ruckus to bring Sheriff Cooper out of the front office, don't know where you got that gun, Manning, but I promise you won't get far. There'll be a posse out before you after sunup. And basically what he does is he locks the sheriff into the cell in his place and says, that's you and me, right? Boy, we got to put a heap of miles between us and this town by morning. You're going to be a first-class outlaw someday, son. I feel it in my bones. You may be just a tadpole now, but you got all the makings. Willikers, you really think so, Pa? Yes, because the Willikers thing... Well, and the stealing a gun. Yeah, probably more the stealing of a gun. All right, so what So the next day, we look at the Cripple Creek Courier. What a headline. Jess Manning sprung from jail by his 10-year-old son. Mark my words, daughter. That boy's gonna cause the world a heap of trouble someday. Remember, so Jess Manning, Toby Manning. Sound like anyone you remember? What in thunder? Haven't heard horses spook like that since the quake of 86. So it's been 2 years. what's the commotion out there? Yeah, it's big as a barn. It was shaped like a pie plate. I'm flying through the sky faster than any bird I ever laid my eyes on. And so basically everyone thinks these two guys who saw this UFO are kind of crackers. Mr. Matlock gets out there and he says, just a moment. I'd be very interested in hearing the story you two gents have to tell for the next edition of The Courier. It's that newspaper man Matlock. Whoa, Cyclone. Get back, Matlock. My horse is so spooked it's loco. Oof, lost my footing. And Matlock falls down. Oh, no. He's going to be trampled. And Clark sees this and everyone's freaked out. But he says, I guess my super reflexes are too well trained. Before I could think, I found myself flying at super speed. If I succeed, it's only because history is already recorded. His life was spared. Wow. This whole fatalism thing he's got going on is getting tired and he's got super intelligence. You'd think he'd have figured this out yet. Anyway, I must have had some loco weed today. It ain't just you, Andy. We all seen it. That boy's flying through the air. And Clark, how could you do what you did to save my skin? He's still alive, but what if I hadn't been here? Does this mean I've done the impossible, that I actually changed history? No, I couldn't have. Far-fetched as it sounds, there's only one other possible explanation. It was my destiny to make this time trip to the 1880s. I was fated to save Mr. Matlock's life because it was always meant to be. Because I was always meant to become part of the Old West history I was afraid to tamper with. But in all the research I did, reading up on the Old West to prepare for my new life, I never came across any mention of a flying boy in the Cripple Creek Courier, which means I can do this and not worry about becoming a headline ahead of my time. See, this is why some of these things that they put, these constraints that they put on time travel, were silly fictional devices that actually hampered the storytelling. But that's a whole other thing. And so off he goes, and they said, look, he's taken to the sky. Well, I'll be hornswoggled. First me and Clyde see a flying pie plate on the, out on the prairie, now flying boy. And they said, but Clark, don't leave. We have to talk. I always knew there was something different about that lad, says Mr. Matlock. And soaring above the clouds, well, he basically, it turns out, he says, even though I vowed to leave my Superboy identity back in the 20th century, I couldn't resist wearing the uniform under my 1880 clothes. Maybe deep down my subconscious knew something I didn't. But now that I know I'm here in this era to play out a role destiny has already chosen for me, I might as well see if my powers can be put to good use after all. And so he goes looking for the UFO, basically. And then we see... he's flying along, and we see Jess Manning and his son several miles away, and he's shooting in the sky. He says, I don't let no strange-looking dude come out of the sky and rob me. Attaboy, attaway, pa, you winged him. And he's shooting at these aliens, and he says, I'll teach that. And the alien says, I'll teach that impudent creature to pay me with his weapon. And he zaps him. Jolted senseless by the shock of his father's violent death, young Toby Manning pays no heed to the ominous presence of the alien assassin advancing toward him. And he says, sniff, pa. He says, a fleeting minute late. A minute later, telescopic eyes detect a grim sign of Superboy's quarry. He says, great Krypton, a dead body up ahead. It's the escaped outlaw, Jess Manning. No sign of the boy, but my X-ray vision confirms that Manning was fatally struck by some sort of unearthly hyper-energy. The UFO was here. No more speculation about intentions. Definitely hostile. So it looks like the alien says he's extracted enough Pimbaxer. Do you think, like, it's P-Y-M-B-A-X-R. Do you think that's a little Marvel swipe, like, you know, PIM particles or, you know, unstable molecules from the Baxter building? I don't know. From this terrain to replenish my proto-engine, which, by the way, precious fuel to the alien but common shale to us. Now to determine whether my proto-cannon has been properly charged. And so he goes to test the cannon. He says that crude cluster of human abodes will provide a more than adequate test target. I will saturate the area with a full volley of weapons fire. And so he tries it, and he says, finally, now to check out the detonation phase. And Superboy gets in the way of that, and basically neutralizes the proto-volley with his extraordinary powers, far beyond all humans. But before the alien assassin can mount his next attack, my gyrospheres spinning wildly. The super being must be taking hold of my ship with his bare hands. Yes, that's right. And so they zap him. And it's like, wow, he says, ooh, too shocked to hold on. And it knocks him back at least. The alien says, ah, there's no life form in the galaxy capable of withstanding the force of my Repello charge. I must terminate the life of this superhuman without delay. With his awesome powers, he's much too dangerous an adversary to leave alive. Nevertheless, I'm amazed that my instruments show this cape being did not perish from the shock. Incredibly, it merely stunned him. But the next moment to the alien assassin's utter astonishment is the fact that he got up, and he says, he rises to his feet so quickly, I do not have a minbot to waste. Each of these ultra weapons would surely destroy his life essence, but to doubly ensure his demise, that's right, he's going to use them both. I shall activate both simultaneously, and so, boom, he leaves a little crater there. And then he thinks that he's basically, yeah, that took care of this superhuman. And Superboy flies in behind him and flips him into the trap door at the top of the ship. And he says, by retread, it's inconceivable. The cape being is still alive. And he says, and well as the saying goes, says Superboy. He says, that double barrel display of yours didn't even rate a tickle. And after the Defender of Earth tosses the spaceman back into his vessel, Superboy basically welds shut the hatch. And then thinks, oh, and then I'll give it a super push in the right direction for this alien marauder. He says, it took some time in this time era to make me realize how wrong I was to withhold my superpowers from the world I grew up in. Although the space invader posed a dangerous threat here in the past, he taught me a valuable lesson I could benefit from in my own time. Even though there will always be a minimal chance my superpowers will backfire in a crisis, the risk must be weighed against the maximum benefits to be gained. So, 20th century, here comes Superboy, back to stay for good. Meanwhile, we're in the Cripple Creek Courier. So, and we hear, and this nice notice Clark left explains it all, Gale. He came out west to work on some problems that were pressing on his mind, and he's all straightened out now. Says he's heading back east. And he leaves us with his heartfelt gratitude and warmest regards. But, Daddy, we saw him fly, take off into the sky. It's our obligation to print it in the Courier, let everyone know. And have our newspaper become the laughingstock of the whole world? No, daughter. Even if the people of Cripple Creek won't ever forget what they saw, the rest of the world will never hear about it. And then there's an epilogue. While the teen of steel returns to his own era, a greatly relieved Mom Pa Kent in Smallville, his alien adversary flees into deep space, leaving Earth light years behind. Behind but not forgotten, for unknown to our hero, the space assassin was not alone when Superboy hurled him off the Earth. I will teach you all I know, Toby, as we traverse the galaxy together, you and I. When you reach manhood, I predict you will become an even greater interstellar outlaw than I. You will be the offspring I never had. Fate decreed that young Toby Manning would not only live up to his alien mentor's dreams, but far surpass them, and return to Earth years later as Terra Man, the dreaded space outlaw who became one of Superman's most notorious foes. Call it irony, reader, or call it history. Okay, so there's a couple of things here. So Terra Man, I don't know that he ever seemed that much older than Superman, but here he is in 1888, so it is 70 years before Superboy. And yes, he's a little bit younger, but he's like 10, right? So he wasn't 80, so there must have been some time travel involved there, and they kind of didn't get into that. Anyway, so there we go. It's the secret origin of Terra Man. All right, so yeah, I kind of went through my own sort of thoughts on flaws in the story. But now what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually get into the Crypto story from issue 22. All right, so we have Superboy basically tossing a branch and then an entire tree. He tosses a branch to Crypto, and Crypto goes to get it. But as he splashes through, he says, I don't see anything exciting about this silly game, but it seems to make my master happy. So, and up he flies with a whole tree trunk, which gets Superboy laughing. And this story is brought to us by writer Bob Rozakis, penciler Romeo Tangal. Unusual to see pencils for Mr. Tangal. Inks by David Hunt. Letterer is John Costanza. Colorist Jerry Serpy. And editor Julius Schwartz. He says, oh, you're such a show-off, Crypto. And he says, well, why shouldn't I be? No other dog on Earth can do what I do. And so they go to race home. But he sees a dog that looks like he's on the prowl attacking Chief Parker, but Crypto actually Crypto sees it and goes to save him, but actually it is Superboy that lifts the chief out of the way, and he says, oh, thanks, Superboy. Thank Crypto. He's the one who spotted your danger, and the other cop is ready to take care of the dog, but Crypto's not having it. He actually gets in front of takes a bullet for the dog, and says, call off your pet, Superboy. That dog's a mad killer. It's got to be destroyed. And he says, that's a decision to be made by Howard Shatt, the town veterinarian, after he's examined the dog for rabies or some other disease. Superboy is right, Thompson, and Crypto is defending the German Shepherd the way you would defend a fellow man no matter what crime he committed. He says, thanks, Chief. While Dr. Shatt gives the dog a full examination, I'll try to locate his owner. And then you'll have it put to sleep. Without a fair trial, thinks Crypto, dogs have rights too. So they're sitting at the table, and they put out some food for Skippy, because that, of course, Skip Kent is his secret identity. And so they're trying this soup, and he sets out a bowl for Crypto. She says, land sakes, Clark, I wish you wouldn't feed the dog table scraps. They're not good for him, you know. She says, Skip could eat the table, and it wouldn't bother him. He says, he's got a point, Martha. Lord knows what Skip has eaten on his jaunts through outer space. Yes, because it's important that you say his name as his secret identity when you're talking about him flying through outer space. So he's eating the soup, and he says, nothing tastes as good as this soup. And she says, I still say when on Earth, eat dog food like normal dogs do. And Clark says, normal dogs? Like the one that attacked Chief Parker? So they talk about it, and he says, well, maybe the dog ate some bad food or something. He says, unless there's a rabies epidemic, Doc Shatt can handle whatever has to be done. But Crypto is laying down thinking, but since Doc isn't a dog, he won't understand that dog's strange behavior. I can't believe that Mad Dog was acting that way from natural causes, but proving it is a job for Crypto. And he uses some heat vision to burn off his brown dye disguise into his cape and collar and out, because now the dog detective of Smallville is on a case. And he gets to the veterinarian, he checks the records, and he says, no sign of rabies or any kind of drug in the dog's body. Also no identification of the owner. Well, it was a quick way to find that out. And so he lets the dog out. And, you know, basically pushes him on so he can lead the way home. So they go through the streets of Smallville to a cabin on the outskirts of town. He says, now let's see what happens. Hey, Frank, it sounds like the Mutt. It's him, all right. The radio said the dog attacked Parker, but Superboy swooped up and took it to the vet. How to break loose? Who cares? All that matters is our scheme has been a bust. We try to avenge ourselves on Parker for putting us in the slammer for 12 years and end up with our killer dog on our back on our doorstep. And maybe the cops figured out how we programmed him into attacking Parker and let him loose to lead him back to us. Programming a dog to become a killer? I'd have bite both of you for that, thinks Crypto. So don't sweat it. I'll shoot the Mutt. And we'll say he attacked us, too. And he says, those guys think all problems can be solved with bullets, but they never thought they'd see a dog faster than a speeding bullet. What? It's a flying dog gobbling up my bullets. I'll send some more hot lead his way. Yeah, see? I'll send some more hot lead his way, see? The more the merrier, thinks Crypto. He says, oh, out of bullets? Here, you can have these back. And he spits the other bullets back at them. And the guy says, yay, he's shooting our bullets back at us. And he says, not straight back, just close enough to get you to run for our lives. And off they go running. And he basically chases them to outside the bedroom window of Chief Parker. He says, hey, what's all the racket outside? It's 3 a.m. What are you guys doing down there? Begging you to come down and arrest us, Parker. Yeah, put jail cell bars between us and these hounds. Just say, I know you two. I nabbed you for a jewel robbery about a dozen years ago. Oh, you know what it was? It was the scrambled egg hunt from Superboy 19. So just 3 issues ago. We did that one a while back where it was a super baby story. And they say, we met a dog trainer in Stir. Yeah, see? He taught us how to turn a dog into a killer. Frank, shut up, see? Yeah, we've been trying to get back at you all this time for that. What for? Smallville's a jinx for us, see? First we were caught on account of some little kid, and now we're done in by a dog, see? And he says, not just any dog, right, Crypto? And he salutes Crypto, who salutes back. And he says, case closed, innocent dog cleared of all charges by the dog detective of Smallville. All right, so that was the backup story in that issue. Then we get into issue 23, which was the second part of the Superboy's Super Failures story. And it is from Superboy's secret diary, The Day of the Secret Signal. It says, life isn't an unbroken series of missions and rescues for me. Now and then I like to get away from it all, out in space, and just have a little fun. But how was I to know that an innocent sport would be the beginning of the Day of the Secret Signal? And so he's flying around in space, you know, just really practicing his flying. And he says, it's fantastic the way I can maneuver in space. I was afraid it would take a lot of practice, but I got the hang of it easily. Sure is fun, but I can't neglect my duties in Smallville. Better take a look and see how things are going. And he takes a look at Smallville and he says, great sons, I got to fly back there at top speed. This story brought to us by Nelson Bridwell is the writer, John Callinan the penciler, Joe Giella is the inker, Milt Snappin the letterer, and Jerry Serpy the colorist, and of course, editor Julia Schwartz. He says, what I'd seen was Chief Parker and another officer take off after some bank holdup men. And sure enough, that's exactly what's happened. But then a little kid walks out in front of the getaway car, chasing after a ball. And so he says, this is a double action job for Superboy. Save the boy and the police with one blast of super breath. And sure enough, he does that, and it pushes the bullet straight down into the pavement, and also the blast of breath ricochets off the pavement, lifting the bandit's car over the boy who's too scared to move. And says, now to shake out the contents of the car. And he shakes the robbers out into the waiting hands of the local constabulary. And he gives the ball back to his friend. He says, now remember, don't ever cross the street without first looking to see if there's any traffic. I promise, Superboy. So they take the crooks back. And Chief Parker says to Superboy, who's clearly a lot younger here because just the height differential, he says, "I certainly was lucky you spotted these thugs when you did. Been off on some important mission, I suppose." "Well, not really, Chief Parker. I was fooling around or flying around and happened to glance this way." He says, "I understand. You're still a boy. You deserve some time to yourself. Still, I wish that you could call me whenever I'm needed. That'd be great. Let me think about it." And so they talk about this, you know, what kind of special signal could you use? And he says, "Yeah, sound might give away your secret identity if the signal went out while you were with someone as Clark." He says, "If only I could figure out a way to produce a noise no one else could hear." And of course, that's a problem that he would solve later was Superman when he created Jimmy Olsen's signal watch. Anyway, so something that would cause a prickly sensation or a mild shock. He says, "It wouldn't work because of my invulnerability. I wouldn't feel a thing." So they decide to put it on the back burner. And he's like, "Well, I'll give it some thought." so he talks to the chief about it and can't figure it out. Anyway, he says, "Don't leave yet, Superboy." "Oh, what?" And he picks up the phone and says, "Yes, Mr. President, what can I do for you?" "It's a national emergency. We need to contact Superboy at once. Can you get in touch with him?" And he goes, "Yes, that is, no, I mean, he was here, but I'd say by now he's most likely with you." And sure enough, there he is flying into the Oval Office to the president. And so, again, thinking of time, it's clearly Kennedy. So we gotta subtract a bit, right? So 67, 68 is where we know the current adventures are happening. And so he would have been about 9 or 10 at this time. So he says, "Superboy, you know what, I'm not even going to try doing an impression. Superboy, your powers are our only hope. This morning, an escaped mental patient had been picked up in Georgetown. He's a former atomic scientist, a brilliant mind before it cracked. He confessed, no, boasted, that he had assembled an atomic..." It's terrible, I'm going to stop it now. "and hidden it somewhere in the district. It's set to go off within the hour." And he says, how can you be so sure he's telling the truth, sir?" He says, "With a madman, there's no way of telling. But we know if he could get the materials, he is certainly capable of doing it." And so they try to figure out what kind of triggering device he's using. "Well, none." He says, "Then my X-ray vision might set it up. I'll have to use some other way to find it." And so he's thinking, "An atomic bomb has radioactive materials, and if one man planted it, lead shielding would have made it too heavy for him. The radiation is normally invisible, but I can see beyond the visible spectrum with my supervision." And so then he sees in the Capitol cupola, and he takes a device and he goes and throws it in the sun. So he says, "The sun is massive atomic explosions. Another one will hardly be noticed." So he gets back to the president, who says, "What led you to the bomb was the radiation's glow." And he says, "Glow, of course, that's it. Thank you, Mr. President. You've solved my problem. I'll be back shortly with an explanation and a surprise." And so he gets into his basement and does this little project. And what he does is he actually says, "It may not be the best way of getting an emergency call, but it'll do for now. As soon as I finish, I took one of the boxes to Chief Parker." He says, "And with this, you can summon me whenever there's a special need." And he says, "Thanks. How does it work?" "Sorry, Chief. That'll have to remain my secret." And then one to the president. And he says, "And when I press this button, the signal will reach you?" He says, "You can count on it, Mr. President. Only Ma and Pa knew what pressing those buttons would do. Now, whenever one of them presses this emergency button, this lamp in my bedroom will blink on and off. Naturally, I'll take frequent supervision glances at it wherever I am." "Very ingenious, son. Congratulations. How about that for a coincidence? It's blinking now. My telescopic vision shows it's Chief Parker calling. Gotta get going." Later, a third person, Professor Lang, received a similar box. But how that came about will be told in a later secret diary story. So next issue, the new adventure in the Misadventures of Superboy, the Tot of Steel encounters a mysterious UFO and the little green men who weren't there. And in the regular story, and this will be for our next Superboy episode, whenever that is, it will be Superboy can't see a thing except through Clark's glasses. Blind boys bluff. So so there we have it. So that's two issues of Superboy all in one. And the origin of his lamp... The origin of Terra Man, and of course, another tale of the dog detective of Smallville. It is an embarrassment of riches. And as I've said, I hope that 2018 is a great year for everyone. We're certainly excited about what this year is for us here at Subs HQ, because at some point in this year, I think it's in May, we will hit our 500th episode. Thanks for all of those who have been listening to us for all that time. Thanks to those of you who have just joined us recently, because I know that a lot of you have been going back to listen to older episodes, and that's awesome. So along with that, comments are always welcome at legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com. You can join us in the conversation on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.legionofsubstitutepodcasters. We are on the Twitter. We are LOSP podcast there. And in addition to all those things, you can head over to our website, legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, where you can leave a comment on this or any episode. And with that, we make our way back into the time bubble and come back looking much younger than Terra Man, I'd like to say. And we will see you all next week. We'll be right back.